28. It was not only the Kammergericht that I had to bid adieu to in those days. Adieu had become the motto of the day, a radical leave-taking of everything without exception. The world I had lived in dissolved and disappeared. Every day another piece vanished quietly, without ado. Every day one looked around and something else had gone and left no trace. I have never since had such a strange experience. It was as if the ground on which one stood was continually trickling away from under one's feet, or rather as if the air one breathed was steadily, inexorably being sucked away. What was happening openly and clearly in public was almost the least of it. Yes, political parties disappeared or were dissolved, first those of the left, then also those of the right. I had not been a member of any of them. The men who had been the focus of attention, whose books one had read, whose speeches we had discussed, disappeared into exile or the concentration camps. Occasionally one heard that one or another had committed suicide while being arrested, or been shot while attempting to escape. At some point in the summer, the newspapers carried a list of 30 or 40 names of famous scientists or writers. They had been proscribed, declared to be traitors to the people, and deprived of their citizenship. More unnerving was the disappearance of a number of quite harmless people who had in one way or another been part of daily life. The radio announcer, whose voice one had heard every day, who had almost become an old acquaintance, had been sent to a concentration camp. And woe betide you if you mentioned his name. The familiar actors and actresses who had been a feature of our lives disappeared from one day to the next. Charming Miss Carola Neher was suddenly a traitor to the people. Brilliant young Hans Otto, who had been the rising star of the previous season, lay crumpled in the yard of an SS barracks. Yes, Hans Otto, whose name had been on everyone's lips, who had been talked about at every soiree, had been hailed as the new Matkowski that the German stage had so long been waiting for. He had thrown himself out of a fourth-floor window in a moment when the guards had been distracted, they said. A famous cartoonist, whose harmless drawings had brought laughter to the whole of Berlin every week, committed suicide, as did the master of ceremonies of a well-known cabaret. Others just vanished. One did not know whether they were dead, incarcerated, or had gone abroad. They were just missing. The symbolic burning of the books in April had been an affair of the press, but the disappearance of books from the bookshops and libraries was uncanny. Contemporary German literature, whatever its merits, had simply been erased. Books of the last season that one had not bought by April became unobtainable. A few authors, tolerated for some unknown reason, remained like individual ninepins in the wreckage. Otherwise you could get only the classics, and a dreadful, embarrassingly bad literature of blood and soil which suddenly sprang up. Readers, always a minority in Germany, and as they were daily told an unimportant one at that, were deprived of their world overnight. Further, since they had quickly learned that those who were robbed might also be punished, they felt intimidated and pushed their copies of Heinrich Mann and Feuchtwanger into the back rows of their bookshelves. And if they dared to talk about the newest Joseph Roth or Jakob Wassermann, they put their heads together and whispered like conspirators. Many journals and newspapers disappeared from the kiosks. But what happened to those that continued in circulation was much more disturbing. You could not quite recognize them anymore. In a way, a newspaper is like an old acquaintance. You instinctively know how it will react to certain events, what it will say about them, and how it will express its views. If it suddenly says the opposite of what it said yesterday, denies its own past, distorting its features, you cannot avoid feeling that you are in a madhouse. That happened. Old established democratic broadsheets, such as the Berliner Tagblatt, or the Vossische Zeitung, changed into Nazi organs from one day to the next. In their customary, measured, educated style, they said exactly the same things that were spewed out by the Angriff or the Völkische Beobachter, newspapers that had always supported the Nazis. Later one became accustomed to this and picked up occasional hints by reading between the lines of the articles on the arts pages. The political pages always kept strictly to the party line. To some extent, the editorial staff had been replaced. But frequently this straightforward explanation was not accurate. For instance, there was an intellectual journal called Die Tat, Action, whose content lived up to its name. In the final years before 1933, it had been widely read. It was edited by a group of intelligent, radical young people. With a certain elegance, they indulged in the long historical view of the changing times. It was, of course, far too distinguished, cultural, and profound to support any particular political party, least of all the Nazis. As late as February, its editorials brushed them off as an obviously ephemeral phenomenon. Its editor-in-chief had gone too far. He lost his job and only just managed to save his neck. Today he is allowed to write light novels. The rest of the editorial staff remained in post, but as a matter of course became Nazis, without the least detriment to their elegant style and historical perspective. They had always been Nazis, naturally. Indeed, better, more genuinely and more profoundly so than the Nazis themselves. It was wonderful to behold. The paper had the same typography, the same name, but without batting an eyelid, it had become a thoroughgoing, smart Nazi organ. Was it a sudden conversion, or just cynicism? Or had Messrs. Fried, Eschmann, Wirsing, etc., editors of Die Tat, always been Nazis at heart? Probably they did not know themselves. Anyway, I soon abandoned the question. I was nauseated and wearied, and contented myself with taking leave of one more newspaper. In any event, these leave-takings were not the most painful. Taking leave of all the manifestations and elements that make up the atmosphere of an era was harder. They are difficult to describe but should not be underestimated, as they can make life very sombre. It is unpleasant enough when the air over a whole country loses all its freshness and perfume and becomes choking and poisonous. But to a certain extent one can exclude this outside air, shut one's windows tightly, and withdraw into the four walls of one's private life. One can seal oneself off, put flowers in one's room, and close one's eyes and hold one's nose when one goes out. The temptation to do this was great, even for me, and many others gave in to it. Thank God my attempt to seal myself off failed from the outset. I could not shut the windows. There were leave-takings after leave-takings waiting for me in my most private life.